Ah, this is nice, isn't it?
It is very nice, yeah,
But what?
well, is this the big surprise?
Oh, no. Don't worry about that. No, this is just a precursor. You organized our cruise across the Baltic Sea, so I'm trying to make this part of our trip just as exciting.
Well, I'm apprehensive.
Surely you mean appreciative.
No, at this point, definitely apprehensive. But I don't really get why you chose this place, Cottbus. I mean, we could have gone to one of the border towns actually separated by the border. You know, there's German Görlitz and Polish Görlitz, there's German Guben and Polish Gubin, there's German Frankfurt and.
Frankfurt? The Frankfurt isn't on the Polish border, it's right in the middle of Germany.
No, you're thinking of Frankfurt Main, the big Frankfurt, the one with, you know, the banks and the airport. But I'm talking about Frankfurt Oder by the river Oder, right by the Polish border.
Ah, you Germans. So you've got a main Frankfurt and an other Frankfurt, highly original.
Well, sorry, we can't be as creative as you Brits are with your Nether Wallops and your Piddle Hintons.
Well, at least there's only one nether wallop, and it certainly avoids confusion, doesn't it?
One Nether Wallop is probably more than enough. But anyway, back to my point. Why Cottbus? I thought you'd had enough of fish in Denmark and wouldn't need a whole bus full of cods.
Very, very, very funny. Now, look, I wanted to come here to learn more about the Sorbs.
Sorbets? Oh man, I love ice cream. Why didn't you just say, let's go?
No, not sorbets, Izzy. Sorbs. They are basically, it's an
Hurry up,
old.
Orlando, or the sorbets will melt.
Izzy, sorbs, Izzy.
Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod.
My name's Orlando.
And I'm Izzy.
And we are two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Love poetry, and we want to share that love
with you.
In our second season, we'll be traveling along the German border to meet our neighbors.
And their poetry. And we'll try and understand what borders mean in our day and age.
Welcome to the Poetry Pod Season 2, Poetry on the Edge.
Izzy, there you are. Ah, lost sight of you. What? Didn't you get me one?
Well, I did, but I met a super cool person by the ice cream stand, so I gave your ice cream to her. But she was so amazing. Listen to this. So she's a translator and interpreter, grew up in Poland, studied in Germany and the UK. She now lives in Berlin. She teaches literary studies at the university. She translates poetry, and she's been running a poetry translation workshop for 4 years, which has so far published three anthologies of poetry and translation. Isn't that amazing?
Slow down, slow down, slow down. Hang on, you didn't even stop to think that we might both want to talk to her for the podcast?
Oh, oops. No, sorry. We just, you know, chatted about the ice cream and then she had to go.
Oh, lovely. So you had a lovely ice cream and then off she went, yeah? Look, this is not the Poffertjes pod. Stop focusing on ice cream and instead interviews and insights.
Interesting story behind this, actually.
Behind what?
Behind the ice cream.
Oh, God, here we go.
No, it's somewhat literary. So this ice cream is called the Fürstpückler ice. I think it's called Neapolitan ice cream in English. But you know, I'd heard the name, but I'd never heard of Fürstpückler himself.
It's certainly a funny name, isn't it? Fürstpückler. So who is this weird guy?
He's called Prince Hermann Ludwig Heinrich von Pückler-Muskau, and he
Quite a
was.
bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
That's quite a more than the ice cream. Yeah,
Yeah.
he was a German nobleman. And he was renowned as an accomplished artist in landscape gardening. And he wrote a couple of books centering around his travels in Europe and North Africa. And guess where he learned about gardening?
No idea.
Great
Potsdam,
Britain, the
Great Britain.
land, yeah, the land of gardening. He went to the UK to study about landscaping, which was very en vogue at the time.
Okay.
And he also became quite well known in London because he spent about 2 years searching for a wealthy wife who would fund his extensive gardening schemes.
Yeah, well, I know the feeling. Yep. If only one could find wives capable of funding ambitious gardening schemes. Did he find this wife?
He didn't, but he wrote a book about his travels, which then became quite a success, called A Tour in England in a Series of Letters by a German Prince.
Certainly catchy title, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, he wasn't too happy about all the things that he saw there. Here's a quote that I found about what he said about the British Museum. I went to the British Museum, where a strange mishmash of works of art, natural curiosities, books and models are preserved in a miserable building. At the top of the staircase, as you enter, stand two enormous giraffes in the character of stuffed guards or emblems of English taste. There is doubtless much that is interesting in the various apartments. I confess, however, to my shame, that I must be in a peculiarly favourable state of mind not to have an attack of indigestion after such a surfeit of sights.
Yes. Well, he certainly seems like an opinionated sort of person, doesn't he, this German prince? Speaking of indigestion, what has he got to do with that ice cream?
Oh, yes, ice cream. So this type of ice cream, which you can see consists of three layers.
It consisted of three layers, didn't it? You've eaten it now.
Yeah, fair enough. Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry ice cream was apparently invented at Fürst Pückler's castle in Moscow, not far from here. And yeah, in Germany, it's still known as Fürst Pückler ice.
A real mouthful, yeah. Well, I definitely want to try one of these Neapolitan ices. In fact, I tell you what, I'm going to have two, and you are paying.
What?
You still owe me 145 Danish kroner.
I'm not buying you 19 euros worth of Fürst Pückler ice. You'll be sick.
Well, I tell you what, you can buy me a Torta Oma later.
A dead granny? Do they sell that here?
Well, they're not that short of meat, luckily. No, it's what's commonly known as a Grützwurst, which is kind of the closest thing they come here to a black pudding.
Oh, God, is that the surprise you've got waiting for me? Another fry-up? The East German version of the one we had in Dover?
Ah, yes, the good old greasy spoon. Oh, it still fills me with nostalgia. But no, we're not here for the food. Actually, Cottbus is brilliant. And it's got a really rich history. It's a lovely old town. It's only 2 kilometres west of the Polish border. And the origin of one of the most challenging German tongue twisters. Listen to this. Wer kennt mich nicht, den Postillon, und seinen Zungenbrecher? Seit 100 Jahren tönt mein Horn weit über unsere Dächer. In Cottbus, da bin ich zu Haus. Beständig blieb die Treue. Denn meine Stadt ist sehenswert. Das sage ich mit Freude. Ich hab die Welt gesehen und gönn den Rösslein Ruh. Mein Cottbus, das ist wunderschön. Drum ruf ich ihnen zu. Ich kann nicht ruhen, ich kann nicht rasten. Der Cottbusser Postkutscher putzt den Cottbusser Postkutschkasten.
Well done. Wow. I didn't even know that, that was a poem where that comes from. Yeah, so if we translate that, it translates to the Cottbusian stagecoachman scrubs the Cottbusian stagecoach case.
Yeah, beautiful. It's a bit more of a mouthful in English, which I never thought I would say, but it is. But yeah. It does work somehow. It does work. Yeah.
Do you have any favourite tongue twisters in English?
I've got loads. But I think the lewdest, naughtiest ones are my favourites, I think, probably. So, like, I'm not a pheasant plucker. I'm a pheasant plucker's mate. I'm only plucking pheasants because the pheasant plucker's late, which is to be recommended when you've had a few drinks and at high tempo.
Ooh, yes, absolutely.
And what about you, Izzy? What's your favourite?
Ooh, I mean, also in the same vein as the whiskey mixer one, which I think works really well in English, in German, because it gets very lewd as well.
That's very lewd in German, which we won't bother to explain.
Learn some German and you'll understand. But I think my favorite one, it's a bit of a long one, but I really like it. It goes, what are to do to die today at a minute or two to two? A thing distinctly hard to say, but harder still to do. We'll beat it to two at 20 to two, a rat ta 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 two, and the devil will come at the beat of a drum at a minute or two to two, today at a minute or two to two.
That's very good. Yeah, I like that one. Very good exercise for the tip of the tongue, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tip of the tongue against the teeth.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. Yeah, very, very good. Very good.
Actually, I'm quite enjoying this walk along the river. I don't think I need a big surprise on top of that.
Oh, no. Not a chance. We are definitely having the surprise. In fact, we're on our way towards it already, just a bit further along the Spree, this river, and then to the left. And here is a quiz question for you, Izzy. If we were to throw a message in a bottle into the Spree here at Cottbus, where would it end up? What do you reckon?
Berlin?
Correct. And then where would it go on to?
Ooh, probably eventually to the Baltic Sea, I guess.
Well, yes, but the Spree doesn't go all the way there. It actually flows into the River Havel.
Ah, the Havel. Is that where Herr Ribbeck von Ribbeck auf Havelland comes from?
That's right. Can you remember that poem?
Yeah. Oh, how does it go? But I think you have to do it with like a Northern German accent as well, or like East Northern German.
Can you
German.
Do that? I can't do it.
Yeah. Herr Ribbeck, I can't do it properly.
It doesn't matter.
Herr Ribbeck von Ribbeck auf Havelland. I think you have to roll the R as well.
Ein Birnbaum in seinem Garten stand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ribbeck. I don't know. It sounds like a frog.
Ribbeck.
Yeah, but it is that, yeah. So the Spree, which we're walking along, it's a lovely sort of green belt, and it's also a biosphere nature reserve. And it flows. How long do you reckon it is?
2,000 kilometers.
No, it's not the Nile, is he? Come on, don't exaggerate. There's no river that long in Germany. It's 400 kilometers long.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to carry on going down, it would take us right down to the Czech border. It's the main river of Berlin, river of the Lausitz, Lusatia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, this sort of settlement area of the Sorbs, from the Sorbian language.
And it's where the Spreewaldgurken come from, talk about food again. Yeah, they're really lovely pickles.
Well, that's your job, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, okay. But I also want to talk about poetry. And this river actually reminds me of a poem by Tennyson.
Oh, okay.
Which I quite like. And it also...
Not crossing the bar, though, I'm assuming.
Not crossing the bar, no. But it kind of, it has some tongue-twister qualities, but it plays a lot with sound. So I think it fits in perfectly here.
Okay, go for it.
And it's called The Brook. I come from haunts of coot and hern. I make a sudden sally and sparkle out among the fern to bicker down a valley. By 30 hills I hurry down or slip between the ridges, by 20 thorps a little town and half 100 bridges. Till last by Philip's farm I flow to join the brimming river. For men may come and men may go, but I go on forever. I chatter over stony ways in little sharps and trebles. I bubble into eddying bays. I babble on the pebbles. With many a curve my banks I fret by many a field and fellow, and many a fairy fallen set with willow weed and mallow. I chatter as I flow to join the brimming river. For men may come and men may go, but I go on forever. I wind about and in and out with here a blossom sailing, and here and there a lusty trout, and here and there a grayling, and here and there a foamy flake upon me as I travel, with many a silver water break above the golden gravel. And draw them all along and flow to join the brimming river, for men may come and men may go, but I go on forever. I steal by lawns and grassy plots, I slide by hazel covers, I move the sweet forget-me-nots that grow for happy lovers. I slip, I slide, I gloom, I glance among my skimming swallows. I make the netted sunbeam dance against my sandy shallows. I murmur on the moon and stars and brambly wildernesses. I linger by my shingly bars. I loiter round my cresses. And out again I curve and flow to join the brimming river. For men may come and men may go, but I go on forever.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Yes, I think that captures the Spree rather nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably what people said about Tennyson. Men may come and men may go, but he goes on forever. He lived, I think, how old was he when he died? 90? 91?
I just thought you were talking about his poetry. Like, oh God, Tennyson just goes on forever, doesn't he?
Depends how long that poem actually, because you didn't cut that, did you?
But, no, that was the whole poem. Yeah,
that was the uncut version. Yeah. No, the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. You could say that. You could definitely, with some justification, say that goes on forever.
But that one goes on forever. I've had the experience several times. Yeah.
Yes, I know you have. I know you have. We won't get into that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in this area, the Lausitz, Lusatia, as they call it here.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, what do you know about Lusatia? All I know is that they have a lot of coal mining here.
Well, that, I don't know that, but it's a bit like the sort of, so we're on the other side of Germany to the Duchy of Limburg, but effectively mm-hmm. it's the same sort of a little area, which goes back to about 965 AD.
Oh, wow.
And surprise, surprise, it has been traded backwards and forwards between the different dynasties, German on the one side, Polish and the Slavs on the other, being sort of fought over backwards and forwards.
Yeah, that seems to be a recurring theme with all these border regions.
Totally a recurring theme. And yeah, and it's sort of, so we've had the Habsburg dynasties, the Jagiellon dynasty. Obviously, it sided with Napoleon. And then at 1815 Congress of Vienna, the territory became part of the province of Brandenburg. With the implementation of the Oder-Neisse line mm-hmm. In the Potsdam Conference in 1945 at the end of the Second World War.
Right.
Everything basically to the east of the Neisse River went to Poland, and the land's indigenous German population was expelled by the communist mm-hmm. authorities. So, yeah, so effectively, it's a very interesting little area. But this mm-hmm. Sorbian dialect, mm-hmm. like the Limburg dialect, it goes over the border.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only do they have their own Sorbs, they also have their own Sorbes.
Well, you'll have to hold your horses or you'll hold your sorbets on that, because we are now getting close to our surprise, Izzy. Are you getting excited?
Yeah, but what are you doing, Orlando?
Stand still.
No.
Close your eyes. Breathe deeply.
Okay.
I'm just blindfolding you.
Oh, God. Look, if this is some sort of joke, it's not very funny.
It's not a joke. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
You could push me into the River Spree and I end up like a dead granny.
Neither of those things is going to happen. Well, you're not going to end up in the Spree anyway. At some point, probably you will end up as a dead granny.
That's very reassuring. Look, Orlando, how far is it? You're starting to give me the creeps.
So now you know how I felt in Kronborg Castle.
Ah, so this is your revenge.
Nothing of the sort.
Haha, very funny.
Yeah. So just a little bit further. It's coming up to the turnstiles. I'm just going to get your wallet out. Just
hey.
A second. €6 each, which is nothing, by the way. You still owe me. Okay, come with me.
Oh dear, this is...
Up these steps.
Oh dear.
I've got you, don't worry.
Okay, I've got a trip. Okay.
No, we're just going down a little corridor here. Down. And then there's a double door in front of us. I'm just going to open it for you.
No, that sounds very creepy.
Very quiet. And now there's a flight of steps in front of us. There's 20 steps, okay?
One.
Going down the steps now, very, very quiet. Very quiet. Okay, and now just...
Okay.
And if you just let me sit you down, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. At least the seats are comfortable.
They're very comfortable, yeah. And taking off your blindfold, and voila!
I can't see anything. It's completely black. Ooh, are we... in a cellar, a wine cellar? Is there going to be cheese?
No. No food. But it's far better than that. It's better and it's far more instructional.
Oh, God, it's not another one of your pedagogical school trips, is it? Oh, wait, I can see a speck of light overhead and... see a planet.
welcome to the Space Flight Planetarium, or as it used to be known, the Yuri Gagarin Planetarium.
Ah, probably back in the German Democratic Republic, right? Oh, wow. Oh, this is very cool. We're flying through space.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps this would be the next theme for our next series, huh? The Final Frontier.
Extraterrestrial poetry? I think that's even pushing our creativity a little. Lyricisms from the planet Zorg.
Yeah, or the planet Sorb.
So, which brings us back to why we're here. Can we talk about it now? What is this thing with
the Sorbs? Yeah, we can, in fact, speaking of the planet Sorb. Why don't we let the planetarium do the talking?
Hello and welcome to the Cottbus Planetarium. Today, we'll be taking you to a foreign world that lies just on our doorstep.
The world of Sorbian languages and Sorbian poetry. Sorbian languages, I hear you ask. Yes, indeed.
There are two separate Sorbian languages. Upper Sorbian and, yes, you've guessed it, Lower Sorbian. Here in Cottbus, you will most likely hear Lower Sorbian, which shares some features with Polish.
While Upper Sorbian is spoken further south in Saxony and is more closely related to Czech. Upper Sorbian is used by approximately 25,000 people today, while Lower Sorbian is only spoken by about 7,000 people.
Sorbian was brought to Lusatia in the 6th century by the Slavic peoples.
And it has basically been an endangered language ever since.
It was always a minority language, surrounded by German dialects, and there were several attempts to ban it throughout history.
However, the Sorbs wouldn't let their language be taken away from them, and they persevered through the centuries.
Not least because of their super poetry.
As in many languages, poetry started as a medium to pass on folklore and religion. It later gained more of an aesthetic value of its own right, and in the 19th century, the poems of Henri Zeilers played a major part in shaping Sorbian political and cultural identity. Some decades later, poet Jakub Bartsiszynski even reached international fame by negating traditional poetic forms, which brought on new movements within Sorbian poetry.
After 1945, Sorbian gained new recognition in the German Democratic Republic, and Sorbian cultural institutions were founded. However, these often moved within party lines, with strong patriotic undertones.
In the 1960s, Kito Lorenz brought about change. He did not give in to ideological pressure, but instead opposed it with playful, subversive poems. But Lorenz was also critical of his own heritage. He did not see the coexistence of German and Sorbian cultures through rose-tinted glasses, but instead tried to find creative ways to deal with conflicts of their past.
Lorenz did not only write poetry and plays himself, as well as publish an anthology of Sorbian literature, translated into German mostly by himself,
but he also supported emerging Sorbian writers by leading literary circles and publishing the magazine Sorbian Poetry, which brought together historical and contemporary Sorbian writing.
Through Lorenz's influence, Sorbian and German have become much more intertwined again, and poets are now using their creative freedom to play with these different cultures and languages.
One poet is taking this cultural exchange even further, Roža Domaščina. Not only does she experiment with German and Sorbian in her poetry, but she also cites Polish, Czech and Slovakian influences. A truly European writer.
Now, what does the future hold for Sorbian languages? Well, we have no idea, but we hope that it will carry on and produce lots of poetry.
And to give you an idea of what Sorbian sounds like, let us now listen to a poem by Roža Domaščina about words and language.
Pučki v tisce. Sim z našich vesku přišva, rič sim přinesva sobu. Nich tu nohce šeju rozumič, su rič zamelčeli. Su so přesnju smeli mi rekli, nechči uči cjace vostane. Mi barbili dava lepših ričov. Do, votrim zah svoa hačna počku. Počki sim vuplunova, a přiladovava, kak so pohorce kulachu. Vumeč puč, mi kazachu. To zespirach pučki, skvadžech je doteski, vodžech je s večkom, večko přilepih k tisce. Ručeš ju času to svišu. nošu klepotacu v tysce moje pučky, kulky, słowa.
With special thanks to Dr. Juliane Reynold at the Sorbian Institute, to Ruja Domaschina, Poetenlatin, and Lyriklein.
So what did you make of that, Izzy?
Wow, that was very interesting, yeah.
We sort of went on a, not only a journey through the solar system, but a journey through the linguistic, cultural solar system.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think it's interesting the way Sorbian sounds. It kind of, to me, I don't know, I don't speak any Polish, but it kind of sounds like someone very German speaking Polish with a strong German accent.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to, I mean, it reminds me of Alsatian, you know, the Alsatian dialect, sort of a little bit like someone speaking the local South German Palatinate dialect with a French accent, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how you get these mixes of languages.
That's right. Yeah, lots of parallels.
Yeah, and interesting also to hear this short history of their literature. I mean, it must be quite difficult because I imagine lots of poetry was just passed on, you know, orally rather than written
down. Well, I mean,
down.
There are all these phases of repression, aren't there? And when things are repressed, I mean, it's happened in so many countries, most notably in recent history in Germany, hasn't it, with burning of books and things like that. The mm-hmm. first thing they do is destroy literature, but what they can't destroy is word of mouth. So these mm-hmm. things do get handed down, don't they? But you just have to remember them. They just get remembered. And mm-hmm. at some point later, they get recommitted to text.
Yeah. But you know what? We haven't really talked about Polish literature at all, have we?
No, and we haven't touched on it.
We're so close to the border.
There's so much to talk about, though, Izzy. I don't even know where to start.
That's true. Wait, how about we start with a 2-minute history of Poland?
That is extraordinarily ambitious, even by your standards.
Nah, true. Well, I'll give it a shot. You know what? I'll try and do that. All right. Do you have your timer ready?
I'm getting my timer out. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
I'm just going to have a look. And off you go.
Right, so the first people to settle in Poland were Slavic tribes, but then in 966, Duke Miezgo, who was the first documented ruler of Poland, declared Christianity as the state religion and kind of laid the first foundations for Poland. In 1025, there was the first coronation in Poland, where Boleslaw the Brave was made the first king of Poland and started the Kingdom of Poland. The 16th century was Poland's golden age. There were lots of cultural and scientific advances, most notably Copernicus. But then the 18th century was a century of crisis in opposition to that. And eventually Poland was split between Russia, Prussia, and Austria in 1795. 123 years later, in 1918, after the First World War, Poland was reconstituted, but then was clear, obviously at the beginning of World War II, invaded again in 1939. 1945, after the end of World War II, communist Poland was created as a satellite state of the Soviet Union. But then in 1980, the Solidarność movement, which was a trade union for workers' rights and social change, brought about more change to move away from the communist the construct. And in 1989, the first elections in the Third Republic of Poland were held. And they had their first president there since 1928. And today, Poland is a thriving cultural and economic place. There we go. Did I breathe at all during those 2 minutes?
No, you didn't. And it's just as well that you didn't, because you're actually under 2 minutes.
Yes. Here, how long did it take me?
On the poetry pod. I think, well, I didn't time the seconds, but I think you basically did it in approximately 1 minute and 45 seconds, I would say.
Yes.
Something of that ilk. I've just got to pick you up on one thing. I love the sound of this guy, Boleslaw the Brave. It sounds like Coleslaw the Courageous.
That was his brother, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Just like our friends the Vikings, yeah, with their funny names as well.
Yeah, Harold Bluetooth and Coleslaw.
Bluetooth.
Fighting against Coleslaw the Courageous. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was a vegetarian, probably, I would imagine. Yeah.
Right. Oh, hey, look, that's the translator I was talking to before.
Oh, well, she better get me one of those first Pukla ices.
Yeah, let's go and say hi.
Okay.
Hi, Carolina.
Oh, hi, Isabel. Hi, Orlando. You know my name already. I'm amazed. Isabel must have already been talking about me. I'm very glad to hear it. She said you're a translator, is that right?
That's correct. I do loads of translating and also interpreting.
Translating and interpreting. So you are a complete linguist, embodied in one person, the complete linguist, because Izzy told me how many different languages you translate and interpret to and from. How many is that exactly?
Well, I work with three languages. So that's Polish, German, and English. And I also speak French and Spanish, but I don't translate from or to these languages. So, yeah, that's me. And, you know, there's this Bulgarian French philosopher and psychoanalyst, Yulia Kristeva. Maybe you've heard of her. She once said that a new language is like a new skin. And I really think sometimes that's what it's happening to me. And sometimes I'm really happy with my new skin, and sometimes it feels awkward. So that's what it is.
And you see the world through new lenses with a new language, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And it's especially interesting if you listen to your own voice speaking a language that is not your mother tongue recorded. And then you kind of have a different relation to it. And it sometimes seems really, really strange.
Mm-hmm. It almost feels like another person entirely.
Yeah, I think we are a little bit different in every language we speak. I mean, as long as you can master the language on the same level as the others, it's kind of comparable. And
Carolina, you said you translate lots of different things as well. You translate prose texts and I think like journalistic texts, but also poetry. And I was wondering, how does translate poetry differ from translating, you know, more sort of story-based texts?
You know, I think translating poetry is requires a very special engagement with the language as a tool, but also as a system. And this is something that, I mean, there are prose texts that are extremely difficult to translate as well, where you where I need loads of time to find the best solution, that are extremely demanding. So it's not that poetry is more demanding than prose. Generally, literary translation is very demanding and requires loads of creativity. But translating poetry, because of its compact, extremely compact form, and because of the usage of uncommon or unusual grammatical structures, oftentimes these are really great challenges, and I enjoy facing them. I think it's a great form of engagement with a language.
You're talking about slipping into the skin of another language. I guess when you're translating poetry, you're slipping into the skin also of the poet as well, if it's that compact.
Yes, this requires this. And you also, you have to be able to slip in the entire cultural framework that the poem is set in. And this requires, I mean, very creative solutions sometimes. If there is a pop singer mentioned in a poem that is, or who is very famous in Poland, but no one's ever heard of him in Germany, then you need to find an equivalent in the German pop scene in order for the poem to be understood by German readers. And these are the challenges I find very interesting.
So I suppose when you translate a poem, you don't just sit down and kind of go through it, you know, word by word, but then a lot of it, as you just mentioned, is also research and understanding the culture.
It certainly is. And therefore, I prefer translating poets whom I can get in touch with, because in case of a complete, if I really don't know what to do with a particular part or a stanza or something, I can always consult it with the author. And I can also somehow discuss maybe a revolutionary translation suggestions. And if I get a go, I feel better about it. Whereas if you work with a poem by someone who is no longer alive, for example, or who cannot be contacted for whatever reason, then there are these decisions that have to be made by yourself on your own. And I think this is, it's just a great responsibility that is linked to it. But I think in translating poetry, this dialogue with the author, in my case, this has always been very fruitful and very helpful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess it is a collaboration in the end, isn't it? It's not something going through a filter. It is really a dialogue and a collaboration.
It certainly is, yeah.
And so when you translate between German and Polish, what do you think were the specific challenges with these two languages?
There are grammatical or grammar constructions that are very common in one or the other language and that are very hard to be translated to the other one without repetitions or without awkward constructions that are then hard to understand. For example, the German language works a lot with composita, so with huge words that actually consist of several other smaller words, but then they're put together and form this one huge, I actually love them, one huge word that can mean whatever you want. In Poland, we have no option like this, so we have to work with a sequence of different words, and these constructions tend to be extremely difficult to write and to read, and it's just not a pleasure to have something like that in a poem. So that's one of the challenges. The other way around, the Polish grammar sometimes is more concise somehow than, or makes it possible for structures to be more concise than in the German language. You don't need articles before every noun. It saves place, and
we
other than
same
this
problem in English with these compound nouns in German like Schadenfreude, we have no word for that. So we would say in English, joy in the misfortune of others, which is very, it's not elegant. Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's the same in Polish, right?
But yeah, exactly. That's a good example. But I know, for example, that some English speakers would use the word Zeitgeist. Yeah. In order to refer to Zeitgeist, and in Polish you would have to say duch naszych czasów, which means three words are being used for this. So yeah.
And so Karolina, you showed me that poem that you translated earlier by Joanna Müller, and I think what you just mentioned about, you know, Polish being a lot, you know, you can leave out articles. Is that also what happened in that poem?
That's true. And also this poem is a great example of the omission of pronouns in the Polish version. So you don't always have to say he or she or them or I, because it's clear who is talking or who is being talked about, whereas the German language requires you to use them a lot because otherwise the reader is lost and then it's unclear who is being meant. So that was also a challenge here. But even looking at the poem, you can tell I didn't entirely succeed. So the stanzas are longer. I mean, the lines are longer in the German translation.
And well, we'd actually love to hear some Polish. So do you think you could read the original poem to us?
With pleasure. Dąsy, musy, winy. Nakrył mnie na śmiertelnym i zastygł, obrażony. Gdyby nie powtórzenie, rzekłabym, że śmiertelnie. Ja mu w żywe oczy frontem jak na dłoni, a on się ode mnie moralnym kręgosłupem, gdyby nie po raz pierwszy, wiedziałabym co robić. Milczenie między nami, gruzeł między tkankami nacieka ciastowato, twardo, rakowacieje. I co, że patologię pociągniesz patyną? Czarne pijary grasują pod skórą. Mota nas, otruli nas smoltokowych toksyn. Recepta? Preparat z rutyną nie zda się tu na nic. Gdy on, nadęty w puenty, pojmuje nieugiętą i ciętą trzcinką logiki, zaczyna dzieci ćwiczyć, kwil chwilo i kwituj z przekąsem, gram dzielnie skarconą dziewczynkę, usta na guzik prawdę, kłótnią skłóconą o głos, od maznę maskę mimikrą i ujdę z głazu płazem.
Thank you. I think I made out the word prawda, but I don't know if that's the same in Polish as it is in Russian.
Prawda means true.
Truth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or truth, yeah.
It's the only word that I recognized.
So that's a poem by Joanna Müller from a book that was published in both languages by Hochrot Verlag, so the publishing house here in Germany, Hochrot, and it's called Mystyczne Must-Have, Mystische Must-Haves. The spontaneous English translation would be mystical must-haves.
So if you could summarize it very briefly, what are these mystical must-haves?
Yeah. Well, there is a poem in this collection that carries the title Mystical Must-Haves. And the collection has been actually, I mean, the poems chosen for this collection were chosen by us, the translators, so by Dagmara Kraus, my colleague, and myself. This collection has not been published in Polish by the author like this, so the choice of poems was our choice. And these were, I guess what connects them is a strong female voice that is confronted with different difficulties and obstacles and also absurdities of everyday life. And sometimes there are solutions proposed or given, and sometimes that's not the case. But there's always a certain joy in facing absurdities. And this particular poem is about, I guess, a relationship and a family and everyday difficulties with coping with one another and yet staying together.
You also mentioned another poem by Tadeusz Dabrowski, I hope I pronounced the name vaguely correctly, which has also been translated into English, you said.
Yes, I thought it would be nice to present something here in this podcast where we have an English translation. It's not mine. The translation was done by Antonia Lloyd-Jones, a brilliant translator from the Polish language. And I thought, yeah, we could also read it here in both languages. List. Wczoraj wysłałem ci list. A dzisiaj przez telefon mówisz, że jesteś w ciąży. Pakuję się i wracam. Witasz mnie na lotnisku. Jesteś jeszcze piękniejsza niż w moim liście, który idzie do ciebie. Budujemy dom. Nasze dziecko rośnie, nasi rodzice się kurczą. Potem kilka lat potu i łez, w których przezornie kisimy kapustę, ogórki na coraz zimniejsze dni. W kolorowance naszego życia jest coraz mniej białych pól. Kredek ubywa, staramy się być dokładni, lecz i tak wychodzimy poza linię. Krzątamy się wokół codziennych spraw, a nasze ścieżki są coraz głębsze, zaczynają przypominać tunele. Tymczasem mój list do ciebie idzie. Otworzysz go wtedy, gdy będzie ci wygodnie. Letter. Yesterday I sent you a letter, and today on the phone you tell me you're pregnant. I pack up and return. You greet me at the airport. You're even lovelier than in my letter that it's on its way to you. We build the house. Our child grows. Our parents shrink. Then a few years of sweat and tears in which we prudently pickle cabbage and gherkins for the ever colder days. In the coloring book of our life, there are fewer and fewer blank spaces. The crayons grow shorter, we try to be precise, but even so we go over the lines. We busy ourselves with everyday matters, and our paths are ever deeper. They start to look like tunnels. Meanwhile, my letter's on its way to you. You open it when it suits you best. So that was a translation by Antonia Lloyd-Jones, published in the New Yorker a couple of years ago.
Yeah, thank you. That was really interesting. So actually, similar subject matter to the first poem. The business of growing old together, the webs that we weave as couples, and fascinating, beautiful language as well. Do you feel that the translation comes close to the original?
I think it's a very good translation. I think it mirrors exactly what the original poem does. A very successful one. Definitely, yes.
You could give us sort of insider knowledge of what makes it a good translation for you?
I think the general tone of the poem is somehow given also in the English language. So it's very... it's very bold somehow, very, very direct and very frank. So there aren't any you won't find a single adjective here that isn't needed. You have the impression the language is being used for explicitly the purposes that the poem is supposed to serve, and there's not a single word too much. And this is exactly the same in the English translation. And I think, I mean, I haven't tried yet, but now I feel, yeah, curious and encouraged. I think it wouldn't be as easy to translate it into German in a way that would be, you know, comparably brief. So, but I might give it a go.
Do you think that there are, I mean, there's a very, very generalized question yet now, but are there more similarities, would you say, as a translator, between the Polish and the English language as opposed to the Polish and the German language, or is that too facile a comparison?
Well, there are certainly different difficulties that are linked to each of the languages, because, as you know, English and German also differ very much, especially in terms of grammar and grammatical structures. So I think it's really hard to answer. I think there are different difficulties, but I wouldn't say there are less or, you know, fewer in one direction or the other.
Certainly pronouncing Polish is not easy. I remember friends of ours trying to teach, a Polish friend of mine trying to teach me how to say Happy Christmas, which I found very, very difficult. Which in Polish is, can you remind us, what is Happy Christmas in Polish?
Wesołych Świąt.
Yeah, that's it. That was it. Yeah, I remember now. It's very, very difficult. There are so many different sort of combinations of vowels and consonants going on, which we in English, and I think in German too, we don't normally have. We were talking, because Cottbus is well known for its tongue twister to do with the Cottbuser Postkutschkasten. Are there any good, very good tongue twisters in Polish? There must be loads.
There are many. I will tell you one that is very common and everybody in Poland knows it. And it also is somewhat ridiculous, but let me give it a try. W Szczebrzeszynie chrząszcz brzmi w trzcinie. Which means in Szczebrzeszyn, a beetle chirps in the reeds.
All right. So, Alanda, should we have a little competition to see who can say it better?
We do. I'm sort of picking out three sections to this tongue twister. Could we have each section very slowly, Karolina, and then we'll see if we can. You do each section very slowly, and then Izzy and I will both, one after the other, try to repeat it. And the one who gets closest gets an ice cream.
W Szczebrzeszynie.
W Szczebrzeszynie.
W Szczebrzeszynie.
Chrząszcz.
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 Brzmi w trzcinie.
Brzmi w trzcinie.
Brzmi w trzcinie.
Wow. I think you should both get an ice cream for me now. This is brilliant.
Well, we now have to remember the whole thing. Yeah, I can't do it.
Wo w trzcinie śmiecht brzmi trzcinie. Okay, I just made up random words now.
It's better than I could have done, so you can have an ice cream.
But that's a tongue twister that uses lots of the diphthongs, yeah? So consonants put together that, when put together, are being pronounced differently than each of them separately. And so if you saw this tongue twister written down, you would also be amazed of how many consonants next to each other you can have within one single word.
That's true. So the Germans have the compound nouns, and the Polish have the sort of the compound consonants. Yeah, so you have the sh, 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 and all of these kinds of noises.
So sometimes it's better not to see the word written down. Sometimes it's better just to hear it, because it might get you off your feet, the written, you know, the written version.
Oh, wow. Well, it's been really lovely talking to you. I think Orlando and I will go now and get some more ice cream, because he's been nagging about it all day. He needs to try some ice cream.
I missed out on the first one, yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much for taking your time and chatting to us. And,
thank you.
Yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye, it was Carolina. Great meeting you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Wow, this has been an informative trip.
Right. Now, where should we get a dead granny?
Oh, God, I'll pass. But you know what? I could do with a pint right now.
Oh, girl after my own heart. Well, funny you should say that, because...
Uh-oh, I feel another surprise coming on.
Okay, here is a quiz question for you, a leading question. Which country has the highest per capita beer consumption in the world?
Germany during the Oktoberfest?
Not quite, nearly. It's the Czech Republic. And guess what?
What?
If we just follow the course of the Spree, yeah?
Yeah.
Just so we keep going basically upstream, it'll take us all the way to the Czech Republic. In fact, I saw a paddle boat fellai right there by the river.
Alana, you just said it's upstream.
Yeah, upstream. All that ice cream's not a problem. I think you'd have more than enough energy.
No, if anything, it means the paddle boat will sink.
Not if you paddle fast enough. Come on. The Poetry Pod's buddies paddle boats to Piddle Hinton. How about that?
That's a terrible tongue twister.
I'll stop groaning. Anyway, Piddle Hinton, not that far away. I don't think there's a Piddle Hinton in the Czech Republic, by the way. But anyway, start rowing. Herr Rybek von Rybek paddles past Polish post offices.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a long trip.
Come on, only 250 kilometres to go.
Oh, dear.